It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and James Parsons.
Well, greetings, Oklahomans, from the sunny state of Oklahoma and in this wonderful nation that we still call America. And as you know, I don't sound like Amanda or James, and today...
And neither do I.
We're in a substitute mode here. I'm Ken Sellers, and my co-host today is Don Wyatt.
Pleased to be with you. It's kind of like bringing the bench team out onto the field today.
Yeah, that's right. Our Oklahoma Thunder, which is our pro basketball team, you know, their bench has been doing a pretty good job, but I'm not sure we can follow that. We'll try. All right. Our program today is in two parts. The first part is going to be Jenny White, who is going to talk about the core curriculum standards in Oklahoma. And Jenny White is with ROPE, and we'll get to that in a little bit. The second part of the program, we'll be talking about the healthcare exchange battle that we've had in Oklahoma and where we're at there, and also an effort, Don, that your group 912 was undertaking on a boondoggle blog.
Exactly. And, looking forward to it.
All right. Well, let's bring Jenny up.
Hello, guys.
Oh, Jenny. Welcome. Jenny. And before we get going, will you give our listeners your website and the particulars about your organization?
I absolutely will. ROPE stands for Restore Oklahoma Public Education, and our website is actually Restore OK Public Education, and it's a .com. And we are not organized as a nonprofit. We're organized as an LLC, and we do have a board, but we really struggle to make sure that the taxpayers are represented in education reform and things having to do with education. So we try to keep a lot of money out of it, so it's our own money and nobody can tell us what to do.
Well, that's a good idea, because you've been involved in the political process too, and you can see the influence of money. You know, and of course, we've always heard, I think voters have heard, that money has corrupted the system.
Right.
But until I got involved directly, I really didn't understand to the
depth.
How many
different ways. Yeah.
Yes, and the way it's done. So you're wise not to be beholden to, anyone.
Yep.
That can pull the strings in your organization. So let's get on with the subject, core curriculum standards. Now, what is that anyway?
Okay. The core curriculum standards are a set of standards that are proposed by, and I'm going to quickly do a couple of things. First of all, there are two laws at the federal level that say that no part of the federal government can install curriculum for the states. So there are two federal laws, one under the Elementary and Secondary Education Act and another standalone law that was put together in the 1970s. Now, if you have an organization that pushes a president and the president gets in, and now we have a larger organization supporting the president that has a definitive agenda, and that agenda is to change the way the country works, one of the ways you're going to attempt to do that is through schools, because the younger children are the less amount of brain power or critical thinking skills that they have, so they're more likely to buy things hook, line, and sinker. Well, you can't have a national curriculum because there are two federal laws against it. So what you do is you attempt to get the states to buy onto a nationalized curriculum by getting around the nationalization part by using private organizations to front that. Does that kind of make sense the way I've said that?
Well, of course it does. In fact, the pattern is pretty simple, and I've seen it many times. They're getting around the 10th Amendment. In fact, they're getting around the federal law by going to the states and having the states pass what they want passed. And this is what I'm seeing over and over again, is that the representatives who are telling us one thing in their campaign are actually implementing this sort of thing behind our back. And when we make the arguments, well, that's against the Constitution, we get, yeah, sure it is, but your state passed it, and so it's okay. And so that's what's happened here, and that's what they do with all of their programs. And of course, then here comes the money. That's the thing that entices our weak-kneed politicians to cave in and go for whatever they're selling.
Well, I think you basically summed all of that up. And the private organizations that are involved is something called ACHIEVE. And ACHIEVE is an organization that was put together by a man named Mark Tucker. And Mark Tucker is the president, has been for years. He actually developed the National Center on Education and the Economy, NCEE. And the NCEE is a, well, Mark Tucker is a socialist, if not a Marxist. He is not identified himself as such. However, several years ago, he put together an idea for a national curriculum that was standards-based, and he called it, well, he put it all together in a very famous 48-page letter that he wrote to Hillary Clinton just after Bill became president. And that quickly was utilized by President Bill Clinton to become something called Goals 2000, which then morphed into something called No Child Left Behind. Well, outcome-based education, which is OBE, is really just another term for standards-based education. And OBE was proposed in the 70s and came to kind of power in the 80s under Mark Tucker. And this is all about, it is absolutely a Marxist method of education in which children are measured on their outcomes, not what's put into the system. So it doesn't matter, we don't need to read Huckleberry Finn or the Greek and Roman tragedies or anything like that, because we're not worried about what's going in, we're only worried about what's coming out. Okay, do you follow?
Yes.
So the outcome-based education model was a personal affront to a number of educators and certainly the conservative community. And in the 80s, when this started to come out, and in the early 90s, many people came out against them. And kind of that effort was quashed as the public suddenly became to understand what OBE was. It became quashed, but then again, as we were just mentioning at the beginning, if you can't get it out in the open, then you go undercover. Okay, and so that's what our federal government is doing. Arne Duncan, who is now the secretary of the Department of Education on the federal level. So ACHIEVE is this organization that has become a kind of a super private organization, and it encompasses a textbook company called Pearson, and it produces a curriculum called America's Choice. And the way this was begun was that America's Choice through ACHIEVE went around to state boards of schools and city school boards and tried to shop them this America's Choice curriculum, which is specifically for turning around low-performing schools. Because if you're not familiar with the way our education system works, It's No Child Left Behind is based all on the number, what's called AYP, Adequate Yearly Progress, that your school produces, and it's based on test results, okay? So if you have low-performing kids and that you feel like those are driving down your test numbers so you can't get AYP, which means you don't get all your Title I funding, okay, then you want to bring up those low-functioning kids. So they sold America's Choice to school boards on that basis. Are you following me so far?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Then there came a little something which I think you guys are pretty familiar with. It was called the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act. And that took $100 billion of our tax dollars, and certainly, you know, more even borrowed, since we're up to, you know, how many trillions of debt. And with the ARRA funds, they donated an entire half, $50 billion, to improving education in the United States of America. Now, it depends on what improving means to you and to me and to them, doesn't it?
Yep, sure does.
Yeah, the meaning of words.
Do what?
I say it's the meaning of words, and that's of course
exactly correct, is. Race to the Top got $5 billion of that money. Race to the Top was a federal grant to get, and they asked schools to compete for this Race to the Top grant. Now, remember, we can't federalize curriculum, so you have to compete for the money. It was based on four things: turning around the lowest performing schools, number two, recruiting, developing, rewarding, retaining teachers and principals, number three, the Common Core State Standards, and number four, a statewide longitudinal data system. So you had four parts that you had to make sure that you got all together in order to get this Race to the Top funds. Okay, following me so far?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Out of that was just $5 billion for the Race to the Top. Well, the rest of the billions of dollars went into different ways of getting, if you couldn't get the Race to the Top money, see, then you couldn't institute the core curriculum, right? Well, so now how are we going to get the rest of the schools to buy into core curriculum standards? Well, we'll offer three other grants as ways to get the money to institute the Common Core. So there was all kinds of money flowing everywhere, and I finally got it all mapped out so I know where it all went. And there's all kinds of money flowing to make this happen. All right, well, the turning around the lowest performing schools, that's where America's Choice came in. So they got into the school boards with the Common Core standards through America's Choice, by applying for this Race to the Top grant, or through Title I funds, use of Title I funds under the Turning Around the Lowest Performing Schools. So there's your first point, and that's kind of where that started. Then you had the statewide longitudinal data system. ROPE has been studying the core curriculum standards for, I would say, about a year now. It's about 8 to 12 months we've been studying and compiling data. And we finally were able to piece all the parts together. And we now have a flow chart. And as soon as I can get that actually out of handwriting and into some stable form, it will be up on our website. So I adjure everybody to continue to check here for the next couple of weeks until I can get it put up there so you can follow this. Do you remember that in the healthcare, the Obamacare, the largest piece of Obamacare was collecting data? You guys are both aware of that, I know, right?
Yes, especially in the healthcare arena, but it expanded well beyond that.
And it sure has and still will. Quick question for you while you're
sure.
Bringing us home on that point. I want you to start visualizing how to wrap all this right back into our Oklahoma situation. But in the meantime, isn't it true that outcome-based measurements or evaluation has been used widely outside of education, for example, in business, as a legitimate way of trying to measure actual results and determining what fails and what succeeds, and is it being used in anything like that same way in education?
It actually, and that's an excellent question, Don, and yes, you are right. Outcome-based measurements are used on a business basis in the business model on a continual flow. But I want you to think about the differences between using that kind of model in business and that kind of model in education. In education, what we're trying to do is give children the opportunity to put things in their brain that will allow them to critically analyze and think through things in their life and give them access to information that will make them well-rounded, better civic-minded, and more responsible people, correct?
Yeah, that's certainly what Thomas Jefferson would have said.
That's what he would have said, correct. And in the business model, really all you're worried about is not even so much what's going on in the workers' heads. You just need to know how to streamline your business and make everything work better. So you're talking not about necessarily the input isn't children's brains or brain power, it's materials and costs.
Right.
Cost basis.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And what I would see being in engineering and working in a business, I see this conflict all the time. The business has a product. It has a market. It has a financial model. And so the outcome-based measurements are designed to sustain that or to measure the fluctuations in it from the norm so that it gets back on the road. But if you ask the question, how do you begin? How does a product come into being? How does a market get identified? How do you build a financial model? Well, then outcome-based measurements don't help you at all with that task. And so you're back to the education, the kind of education you just described, that Thomas Jefferson and, you know, and actually education that some of us Americans got.
And once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Yeah. One of the questions we always want to be keeping in the back of our mind, and I've certainly got in the back of my mind, is if education and all the money we've been spending on it is really working, are the kids coming out any better informed about American history? And you'll have more to say about that later, I'm sure.
Well, you know, let's not get down that road, because that could keep me here for forever. Okay. In the Common Core State Standards, there are two players, the National Governors Association and the Council of Chief State School Officers. A chief state school officer would be the superintendent of public instruction for that state if they have one, or the president of a board of education if that's how the state governs education there. So that's who those players are. Also involved in the Common Core are the Gates Foundation, AFT, American Federation of Teachers, NEA, National Education Association, the PTA, the Parent Teachers Association, State Higher Education Executive Officers, Intel, the Council of the Great City Schools, ACT, National Association of State Boards of Ed, and Pearson. Okay? Now, this... I want you to keep some of those in there, but obviously Pearson should hit you right away, because Pearson is involved in the textbooks, is involved in this other stuff. Okay, now.
Is Pearson the only publisher on that group?
Pearson is the only publisher on that group, yes. And Achieve has, and their little nest that they created with the National Center on Education, the Economy, and Pearson is going around and buying up everything that they possibly can that schools would be using for the core curriculum. Does that make sense?
It sure does.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, when we started putting together this flow chart, and all of this is in a flow chart, we started noticing where all of the arrows in the flow chart were going. And it became extremely obvious, even as convoluted as you'll notice that this flow chart is when you finally get a chance to look at it. All of the arrows go to one place, the statewide longitudinal data system. As we went through and we looked at this model, it became more and more apparent that something called the National Education Data Model, which is being called the blueprint for data collection for schools, is the end game. That's the end game. I mean, now Common Core is a big part of it, but the true end game is the database. Well, so after we started noticing that all of the arrows were pointing to the database, let me give you the names of some people that are involved in the database collection. Hold on just one second. I'm trying to put these all. The National Governors Association, the Council of Chief State School Officers, something called SIF, which are the Schools Interoperability Framework Association, which I think you'd probably be familiar with, Don. Post-Secondary Electronic Standards Council. All of these pseudo and government agencies, as well as the agencies that are involved in the core curriculum. Well, somebody told me one time that he is not a conspiracy theory, because most conspiracies are right in front of your face. You just are looking past them. This is one of those. They have published all of this information on all of the government websites. I have all of it documented. It's all documented in the printouts that I have in the collection of the URLs that track back to all of these internet sites. The National Education Data Model is collecting data, and I'm not joking. I took 13 separate screenshots of the data points that they're asking schools to collect. Inside of these data points, you'll find things like hair color, eye color, who owns your home, how many parents are in the home, what is the blood type of the child, what are the health issues of the child, whether or not health records have been submitted. Is any of this making your eyes spin around in your head and your hearing start going?
My eyes are shooting blood right now.
Yes, and that is one element of the full range of data that they're collecting on Americans in just about every aspect of life. So you're detailing a piece of it, and they get a hold of the kids early. Right now, the old fogies like me, they're going to let pass the scene, but the young kids, they'll know everything there is to know about them.
Since they're going, go ahead, Jenny.
We have a few minutes, so let me try to wrap all of this up. Do you guys know what the FERPA guidelines are?
Not particularly.
Okay, the FERPA guidelines, and honestly, I can't remember exactly what the name of the guidelines are. Hold on. I think I've got them right here. Okay. Federal Education Rights and Privacy Act. Well, FERPA guidelines were put in place when children with disabilities began to be included in public school. FERPA guidelines were instituted for education, just like HIPAA guidelines were instituted for healthcare data. Mm-hmm. Well, that happened, like I said, when children with disabilities specifically began going back to school. The FERPA guidelines that we have right now, I'd like to read you just one line. This is from something called the Data Quality Campaign, which is funded by ACHIEVE, the NGA, the National Governors Association, Microsoft, a number of different things. On the Data Quality Campaign website, you can read the following thing under FERPA. It says, quote, many states and other organizations that support the Data Quality Campaign have reported that the Federal Family Education Rights and Privacy Act, FERPA, has been interpreted and implied in a manner that has had a significant chilling effect on the willingness of states to develop robust state longitudinal data systems as a necessary foundation for standards-based reform.
Surprise, surprise. People don't like it.
So, what are they trying to do right now? They're trying to change the FERPA guidelines, and I've gone through the FERPA guidelines and looked at them, and here's basically what they're saying. The school should be available to collect any data that they deem necessary to help the education of that child. And in turn, you are allowing them to do it without parental consent at all. So my 6-year-old could be subjected to something like the Inquisition at school without my notice, yep, without them even having to let me know. And then they can turn around and use that data for research. They can send it to whatever institute they would like. They're literally repealing the FERPA guidelines. Now, they're giving you 18 pages of document that say they're not. This is how they're trying to change them. But basically, they're trying to repeal all of the FERPA guidelines. And I would just hope that anybody who's listening to this would help us. I'll be sending out an email in a second. We have one more day, which is Monday. The commenting stops at 5 p.m. tomorrow to make comments saying do not change the FERPA guidelines. If we can't get them stopped, then it's just going to be a absolute necessity for us to all go out and tell people what's going on in schools and tell our children not to give any data at all to anybody. And if they want it, they need to call the parent.
Wow.
Because I think the major concern that I would have is they can add data to the data sets that I've already captured on screen. What if one of them is, are there guns in the home? Yeah. Well, we feel like little Johnny isn't performing very well, so we're going to ask him some questions. Well, Johnny, do you have guns in your home? Well, yeah, we do. Well, now I'm concerned that Johnny does not feel safe in his own home, and that's why he's not performing academically, and I better tell DHS.
Exactly. Yeah, in fact, we had a discussion in a totally different forum related to health care on which do you have guns and are they kept locked is on a questionnaire for admission into emergency rooms, and that's getting the parents, but same problem with kids at school, I'm sure.
Yes, and so this is absolutely, and in closing, because I know we need to wrap it up, but in closing here, I would tell you that just recently, a man named Jack Heron was released from the State Department of Education. He was the chief financial officer for the State Department of Education. And our new superintendent, Dr. Barisi, fired him. And I had a chance to meet with him yesterday, as a matter of fact. And as I gave my presentation to a local teachers organization. And he told me, because I saw him furtively writing while I was talking.
We cut her off.
To promote your business on the internet? The Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio at truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio at truthinfocus.org.
Canyon State Wireless is your hands-on source for design, sales, service, and installation of the best land mobile two-way radio systems. Check us out on the web at canyonstatewireless.com or call us for specific information at 866-458-4772, 866-458-4772. Canyon State Wireless. When you're serious about communication.
Welcome back to America in the Balance, it's an Okay Safe radio program on Truth and Focus Internet Radio, and I want to see if our guest Jenny White is still on with us.
I am. You can't get rid of me that easy.
Well, you know, this is really obvious here that we don't know how to produce anything, right? So we just ran the music right off the middle of the best story that you had all program. So we're going to let you finish it here. Let you go ahead.
Tell us about Jack.
Well, the man that was fired, Dr. Jack Heron, he was writing furtively while I was talking the other day, and I kept wondering, in the back of my head, what is he writing about? So after after I finished speaking, he looked up at me and he had these great big eyes, and he goes, "Wow, I was writing down before you were saying it everything that you were saying." And I said, "Really?" And we have this discussion, and he believes, and we didn't discuss it in terms of the superintendent herself, but he believes that this is and he's been on the inside for years because he worked there under Sandy Garrett. He believes that the core curriculum standards are the way in which we are going to socially change this country.
Mm.
Hard to disagree based on what we know now, isn't it?
Well, Jenny, I've seen written somewhere that our new superintendent, Barisi, is a supporter of the CCS curriculum. And is that true, or is she put into some sort of corner to support that, or do you think she's really behind it?
No, she's behind it.
Okay.
No, she's absolutely behind it, and I have spoken to her about it, and she doesn't, my opinion is she doesn't see the issue. We had our members call and ask her to please stand down from them, and that frustrated her, and she was upset that people would be calling and giving her perspective. I'm very concerned about this. I'm very concerned that our superintendent is not interested in our concerns. I'm not exactly sure how we're going to get around that, but I can tell you that we have spent, as both of you know, since we see each other frequently at the Capitol, several of us from ROPE have spent the entire session at the Capitol and reading the bills that we had time to read and looking at the bills that we had time to look at. And she is instituting all of these pieces through legislation. Mm-hmm. And when we've caught them, we've tried to stop them. We almost had one of them on this P20 council, which is the council that's the ones that are supposed to be putting the data system, changing the wave and turning it into this all-encompassing data system. We had the bill killed, and then the chairman of the House Education Committee went around and, kind of whipped the vote and got a number of them to switch their votes, and she called for a recall, and the bill passed. So we have we're in an extremely bad situation at this point in time, and that is that our state superintendent is not apparently interested in the public opinion on this because there's a lot of money involved. I mean, there's $50 billion overall.
Well,
there's a lot of money involved, and I can say for certainty that the chairman of the House Education Committee and the chairman of the Senate Education Committee both believe that whatever our new superintendent needs to be done, and it doesn't Katie bar the door on anybody who says any different. So it's going to take a very large effort this summer for us to get out and explain what's going on and change some hearts and minds of legislators, but then also of taxpayers. We're going to have an amazing amount of support going into next session to get this killed and stop this train. We just must. We have no other choice.
We agree.
Well, you've just explained a pattern that I have seen in other areas of concern for conservatives, fiscal, social, freedom issues, sovereignty issues. They play this all the same way. You catch them at what they're doing, you stop the bill, and then they find a way around it.
Yep.
And I think our listeners need to, if they get nothing more out of this, than to understand that the people that we elected who told us that they were going to do one thing are doing something else. And they are following a model that is aimed at undermining and tearing apart the American model that most people have in their mind, and that's the model of governance and education and social structure.
Right.
And so one more disappointment, it sounds like. We got deceived again.
Were there any victories down at the legislature this year, Jenny?
Well, I wish I could say there were a great number of them, but we were able to get a section of a bill taken out, which referred teacher, because don't forget, recruiting, developing, rewarding, and retaining teachers is an issue. And we were supposed to be training teachers according to this national SAP development model. And, of course, Lynn and I went back, and well, Lynn was the one who dug up all the information on the National Staff Development Council and found out that basically it was run by the Annenberg Foundation. Does anybody know who the Annenberg Foundation is?
That rings some bells, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you sit there and you think to yourself, do they not know, or are they willfully ignorant? I mean, because you have to pick one, because there's no sense to any of this. They say they want change. They say they want reform. And yet all we're doing is the same thing that we've been doing before. We're just doing it worse than we were before. I'll give you that's change, but that is not reform.
Yeah, but it's changing things that we would presume as innocent bystanders would reflect on education, and that's not their mission at all. Their mission is control and the altering of the society.
Well, because, and if you think about it, it was so interesting that you immediately tied in the healthcare data with the data collection for this education model. And if you stop to think about it for the people who are listening, how do you control somebody? You control them by knowing everything you possibly can about them. Why do stalkers, for lack of a better example, how are they so successful? Because they stop and they watch the movements of the person that they're stalking so that they can actually end up being successful at the end. So data is what makes us up and makes us individuals. So if you can take our data, if you can strip it from us, then you can prevent us from being individuals, because you can plug us into holes.
Sure, and you have the ability to know where we go, what we do, or to block what we do.
Where our strengths and weaknesses are, how to fight one and take advantage of the other.
Precisely.
Well, let me ask you this question. It's in the Tulsa area. Perhaps you know about the school closings that are going on in Tulsa Public School. I had a conversation with one of the conservative school board members and asked her what was really going on here, because, you know, I know that there is the cover story and then there's the real story. There's always something else besides what's obvious. And she told me that actually it's an expansion effort going on to where Tulsa Public Schools is trying to pull in the EduCare program that Kaiser has been pushing and actually has set up, and the junior colleges. So they will bring even a wider ability, a more consolidated ability to influence our kids. Now, the public thinks that they're being fiscally responsible, and so that's how they sell what they're doing behind the scenes.
Well, I can verify that that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, because I sat there in the committee meetings and listened to the kinds of legislation that they're pushing. And I've seen Margaret Erling, who is the chief lobbyist for the Kaiser Foundation, and I've seen what she's lobbying on, and they're extremely interested in education. And they want birth. They want birth to death education, basically. And that's why they're trying to get into the preschools. And they're basically holding out all of this money and touting EduCare as, you know, the way that we're going to do it. And I think the thing that's so frustrating for me is something that's epitomized by a Democratic legislator, senator, actually, that I was speaking to in the hall one day, and she said, they keep telling us that this is for the poor folks. Well, number one, there aren't that many poor folks. And number two, how are we going to help poor folks by taking their kids away? And I sat there and went, and she said, how are we going to help those poor folks parent by taking their kids away? And I looked at her and I thought, I mean, my chin just about hit the floor and went, but that'd be pretty much it.
Yep.
Yeah, and of course, for our listeners, you know, Educare sounds like, well, what's wrong with, you know, educating the kids at a younger age? That's got to be a good thing. And, of course, what we always have to ask, well, first of all, parents know for sure that kids learn most of who they're going to be between 0 and 5. And so, the elite in the educational system, of course, sees the child is being spoiled and ruined because of the parent. So this is an effort to get them away from the parent, to teach them even more of the socialist concepts. And so parents or people, listeners here, need to ask, what is it they're educating our kids with and for? Because
I want to point out something that's going to, I'm sure, get me into a lot of trouble, so I'm going to right now say that neither one of you are involved in what I'm about to say, so I'm taking Okay Safe out of the picture. But I want people to really study history, and I want people to go back and look at how Hitler rose to power in Germany. And one of Hitler's absolutely integral pegs or pieces to his puzzle in his rise was taking children out of their homes and instituting them in government schools at the earliest possible ages, some as early as 2, some as early as birth.
And if you read Marx, you understand why. And if you read history about Stalin or Castro, same story.
It's all Marxist. It's all socialist. And yet we are so willing to overlook that and say, oh, but isn't it great that kids are getting help? I mean, and I don't know, you know, I think the only way to get through to people and to really open their eyes is to show them this data that we're collecting and let them see who's involved, and then draw out the biographies of the players that are involved, and understand that what your parents always said to you is true, and that is you're known by the company you keep.
Absolutely. And the friends you choose.
Okay, well, we appreciate, Jenny, that you spent this extra time with us. And,
thank you for letting me. I really appreciate it.
And if you would, give our listeners your websites again and your contact. And
www.restoreokpubliceducation.com. And there is a contact button in there, and then you can just contact me, or you can just contact me at jenny@restoreokpubliceducation.com.
Jenny, thank you for all you do. It's a pleasure to know and work with you. And I don't know how much louder you can sound the alarm, but let us help you try, because the danger is imminent and the risks are gargantuan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Don and Ken, you know how much I respect you and just love you guys to death. And thank you so much for having me on. And I really appreciate you giving us an opportunity. And I will talk to you soon.
Well, thank you very much. And keep up the fight.
I will. Thank you, guys.
All right. Well, Don, you know, we've been in a fight on another subject, but a similar nature to it, and that's on this healthcare exchange.
We have. It seems like the same playbook, just a couple of exchanged words.
That's right. Well, the healthcare exchange, what is it? Well, Oklahoma is trying to implement it. Many states are trying to implement it. And shock of shocks, most of them are Republican governors that are behind pushing it. And the healthcare exchange is a part of Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, and it is the mechanism, it's on-the-ground mechanism to actually implement managing health care. And, of course, they're beginning to draw in the insurance companies and ultimately register and enlist people in this system.
They are.
And, of course, Oklahoma took a $54 million grant, or at least indicated that they would.
Applied for it and were accepted. We can at least say that.
That's right. And we were one of six or seven states that was given a grant to begin this process.
An early innovator grant. Aren't we proud?
Yes. And our $54 million was way over and above what anybody else had. So there tells me that there was something going on here, pretty significant in the federal plan to implement this system. And so our Amanda Teagarden, the director, executive director for OK Safe, got into this and began to explore it and dug out the documents and spread the word in her network, and the grassroots organizations got together and shed light on this, and the politicians did their best in the House to pass it. In fact, they did pass it by a single vote.
That's right.
It was with great consternation they
that
did
was
it.
Called House Bill 2130.
Yes. And that went over to the Senate.
And it's almost like they slipped that below our radar. I think it was actually after or during the passage of that that we began to discover what that really was. And an awful lot of legislators for some weeks thereafter assured us that it had nothing to do with what we found it to be. And that was a direct conduit to the Affordable Care Act.
Yes, and that was the alarming part about it for me. And as Jenny said, you know, there's really only a couple of ways you can take this. Either, people are ignorant, willfully or not, but they're ignorant or they're complicit in it. And so many of them said, oh, no, like you indicated, it's not that at all. It's not what you think. And, of course, we had the documents. And not only did we have the documents, we had the state's response to the documents.
Right.
The grant documents. And so it was a task of trying to get these legislators to even read it.
It was. It was a real challenge, but we persisted, and some started to read and some started to see the light. And fortunately, I can report that 2130 got stopped over on the Senate side, thank goodness. But the Lazarus syndrome occurred, where bad bills keep popping back up after they're dead. And this time it was 1996 where they stuck that same language and tried to run that through again. And we discovered it earlier this time, got that stopped in committee. And then the same or slightly modified language, but the same intent, got stuffed into Senate Bill 971. And we managed to get that one stalled, at least for this session. There's supposed to be some study organization set up to review this during the interim between this session and next in an effort to try to determine the right course of action for Oklahoma to take. And
yes, and of course, the angle that they're trying to take here is that we're going to not do a health care exchange. What we're going to do is a health network. We're going to rename it, and we're going to make it uniquely Oklahoma, so that it serves Oklahoma. And, of course, OK Safe is asking the question, what do we need this for at all?
Exactly.
What is this?
Exactly.
Well, the answer is, we need a website so that people can go and shop and compare prices. And I'm thinking, $54 million to do that? I think not. I think there's a lot more to it than that.
Absolutely.
Of course, there is. It has a huge amount of data collection associated with it. And ultimately, it's a steering mechanism, it's a spread risk around, and ultimately, people, that will be their only choice, is to be part of this, quote, state network.
We need to realize that, because the shocking thing to me in recent study is to realize that we're not still fighting to defend against the incursion of Obamacare. Obamacare, in most of its form, is already here. And it came through the guise of regulations related to Medicare and mechanisms and structures that were built around that since the mid-90s. And it's really alarming to see the continued evolution of those structures and the way in which it's all designed to simply conduit Obamacare right into place.
Yes, and it follows the strategy of breaking it up into pieces and to put the various pieces in place. And as it turns out, the stimulus package that we've been told has actually had a huge amount of the funding that went to the states to get this started. And if I recall properly, Oklahoma last year, not this last legislative session, but the prior one, took somewhere between $3 and $4 billion from the federal stimulus bill.
I think it was actually a little more than that, but I don't remember the exact number. If you'd asked me to give you a number, I would have said $5 or $6 billion. But in any case, it's a lot of money.
Well, yes, it is, and of course, we can blame the Democrat governor for having done that. But we are seeing that it really didn't make any difference. Of course, we had a Republican a legislature that could have caused all sorts of problems for that if they wanted to. They had to ultimately approve the the use of the money. So now that we have a Republican governor, we're finding out that there's no really strong effort to reverse any of this, to resist any of this. In fact, you know, while we were in the fight, there was, quote, an emissary, ex-Senator Williamson, who works for the Senate, Oklahoma Senate, was sent to the grassroots to see whether or not there was a compromise that could be met or could be, sort of crafted so that the governor had to pass something, right?
That was what they kept telling us, right?
That's what they kept telling us. Well, in that little conversation, that little exchange, real insights came out, and we were told that the governor was, quote-unquote, livid over this.
That's right.
That she was bound and determined to pass this thing, and it was completely misunderstood by those who were in opposition to it.
Right.
And, of course, she got caught flat-footed. Anybody that can read could see this was Obamacare, a big piece of it. Taking the money didn't make any sense.
That's
if
right.
you were going to back our attorney general in a lawsuit against it. They got caught in a political crossfire.
Well, our challenge now is we not only have to continue to slow it down, it's still got some forward momentum that we have not fully arrested, but now we've got to start working very hard and very diligently in the coming legislative session to start repealing and wrapping this stuff backwards, because the web is woven very tightly and it's going to be a real challenge to undo.
Well, yes, it is. And I would warn our listeners that the way this works is when they get stalled politically in doing something, they have an interim committee assigned to it to study it over the summer. And what that's about is to have public pronouncements of credible people who declare what this is and declare the need for it. They determine who the opposition is, how strong they are, what it takes to neutralize them, to line up the support. So next session, they roll out the bill and expect it to fly right on through.
Yep.
And anybody that stands up is going to catch their PR program.
Sure.
And so in the off season, we have got to make sure that people understand that is what happens.
Right.
And that whatever they come up with, it's going to be the same thing.
Yep.
Just named different and sold different. But believe me, watching this up close, the Republican leadership in Oklahoma is determined to implement a key piece of Obamacare.
That's right.
You mark that down, because that's what they're trying to do.
That's right. And, that leads me right into the next thing I wanted to touch base on briefly. That sounds like a boondoggle to me.
Well, it is. Millions and billions, and what's it for, right?
Exactly.
Trillions later.
So our organization, the Tulsa 912 Project, and a couple of others have banded together to form a new website called boondoggleblog.com. And our mission is to build a posse of bloggers and a even larger posse of commenters to help us identify and expose these kinds of boondoggles. A boondoggle is what we define as useless work paid for by public money. And we think that that's probably the best definition of some of the bureaucratic money wasting that we can put our hands on. And so boondoggleblog.com is just off the ground. We were inspired to form this a couple of weeks ago in a battlefield training program that American Majority led for several of us. And they said it's too much work for one person to do a blog and do it well, so you need a posse. So that's the first idea, is to get several people together as bloggers. And the second thing is they said focus local, and so we want to make this a blog for all things local. We want to have delegates from our organizations regularly attending the city council meetings, the school board meetings, the meetings of the various boards and authorities, because there's a monstrous amount of money that's being managed, we think, recklessly in those organizations. We don't think they're paying attention to our interests and our long-term needs. And we want to expose them. And on this website, you'll find information to use as activists. If you want to know who your city councilman is or how to contact him or who the staff is, that's there. If you want to do some research and you stumble across something that you think your neighbors need to know about, then we need you as a blogger. And we'll accept you as a regular permanent member of the posse or as a guest blogger, and we even expect to have a couple of ghost bloggers. That's people that, because of their current situation, really can't step out and take the full credit for information, but they can provide it to others of us, and we can stand in their stead. So we'll have some ghost blogging, some guest blogging, and some posse blogging. And there's several blogs that will be posted within the next couple of days, and I encourage everybody to keep an eye on it. You can go to Facebook and Twitter, and we'll keep you updated on exactly when a new blog has been posted.
Well, Don, that's pretty exciting, and I'm encouraged to see that there's more effort being put out to get information out there. I know that it's a lot of work, and the job is monumental, so... You know, I commend you for undertaking that, and of course, it does start locally. In fact, the strategy that's being that's happening, and that we've seen it at OK Safe now for quite a while, is that it's our biggest enemies, honestly, are our local representatives, sure. Our city councilors.
Right.
Our mayors.
That's the way the current revolt started. The one that we're battling against, the one that took our country away from us, that's the way they started. They started with my generation in the 60s deciding that they had to take over schools. And boy, did they do it. And now we've got to take it back.
Yep, that's right. And we have to take it back where we're at. We can't worry about Kansas or Missouri or any other places. There's plenty of people there taking care of their own business. We have to take care of our business here.
Exactly. Well, thank you for your encouragement, and we'll keep the listeners posted on how we're doing.
Okay. Well, we're getting near the end of our program here, and I want to be sure, Don, that you get the 912 information out there, your websites and anything else,
thank
your schedules
you very much.
Or any?
Tulsa912project.com, that's our group. We have a lot of activities, too many to even mention, but they are on the website. And then as an affiliate, the boondoggleblog.com.
Okay, and for OK Safe, our website is www.ok-safe.com, and that we have a blog link there, OK Safe blog. We have a newsletter that we ask you to sign up for. You'll find that on the website, and it will tell you what the hot issues are and how you can make a difference.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Don. And one more time, we'll put a wrap on this, and we'll say God bless.